Take out the papers and the trash.
Would you look at that? It's another episode of Icy Takes with Jeff and Big Dave. No Zach this week. He couldn't make it to the podium with us, Jeff. You know, it's been two long weeks since I've last heard your voice. How have you been?
I have been bad, Dave. I think with everything going on in the world right now, it's just been... you know how they say that, like, this time of year is usually the dog days of summer for baseball? Like, this is kind of what the dog days are kind of like. It's kind of just like, seems like the same thing over and over again. And yeah, sports are back, but it just seems like this year is starting to drag even more than it has before with all this stuff going on.
Yeah, I mean, it's just not the same old, because there are some decent topics that we're going to be getting into, but I get what you're saying. It just seems like now that we are kind of in our own element with having sports on to watch every night, you kind of get like the same sense of what's going on, even though, you know, we have the playoffs in August in the NHL. Never happened before. This is usually what, training camp right around now, isn't it?
Yeah. Normally we're talking about, you know, camp starting in a couple weeks, and you know, usually like players are starting to come in and do player ran practices and stuff, and we're talking about round two of the Stanley Cup playoffs. So I know round one was a little bit crazier than what we expected, but that'll be something we can talk about here in a little bit.
One thing I will go over is that the past couple weeks, because I wasn't here last week, didn't play last week, August 16th, but my team said they split. They went 1-1. And since joining them last year, that is the only time I've ever heard of us splitting any games. We either win two or we lose two.
So you guys either go for it all or you lose it all. Kind of like how you guys play there.
Correct. But then this weekend was a little bit of a whirl. There was a tournament on Saturday, this past Saturday, a wood bat tournament. They called Snake Bite.
Mm-hmm.
And we started at 10 a.m. And it was a round robin style tournament where you played five games. And I think the top two records played for the championship. Excuse me. We weren't one of the top two records. But it was a lot of fun and very tiring. And let me tell you, marathon drinking, when it comes to playing softball, you get a little bit tired. So come the fourth game, I'm still playing third base. I got an easy glove hand play. I throw it on to first. It slips off my index finger and flies over the first baseman. After that, I looked at my one buddy that was playing. He didn't really get on the field too much. I'm like, do you want to play third? He's like, yeah, sure. I'm like, all right, get in there.
So how come he doesn't play? Is he just like
a... He was like an alternate hitter. Mm, like, gotcha. A designated hitter. So he was in the lineup.
Would he bat over Gregory Polanco?
Not this past weekend, but before this Milwaukee Brewers series, yes.
Okay. Because yeah. I made a lot of money off Gregory Polanco not hitting last week.
There you go. I'm proud of you.
Like a lot of money. So, yeah. So we're going to have a lot of Gregory Polanco references probably in the show.
And then, after the tournament, well, we went 2-3. I don't know if I mentioned that. But so yesterday had our final two games of the regular season and won both of them. So now we are going into the playoffs. We were tied for the number three spot, and top four get a first round bye. So we get a first round bye next week of 13 teams, single elimination. And the way to determine third and fourth place was a coin flip, and we won the coin flip. So we are the number three seed, and I believe we don't play until 1 o'clock tomorrow, and we should be able to go Zumbaya and be done in a couple hours or lose in the first game. Who knows? We need to win three to win the championship.
So you're just not making any plans for that day at all, right?
No, not at all. It's the last softball Sunday.
Oh, geez. So, well, that's good. You know, it's last softball Sunday. You figure you got, what, one more week left, and then you got Steeler Sundays.
Exactly. So,
softball knows where it's at, you know. During the offseason, we play, and then Steeler games get going, knock it off, get inside, and turn on CBS at 1 o'clock.
And not the first week for the Steelers, but almost every other week.
Right, yeah. I mean, that's the ideal game, though, is the 1 o'clock game on CBS.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, softball and football Sundays don't intertwine for me.
That's got to be a pretty good thing to have in your back pocket.
Is there anything to talk about with you this past week or week two?
I don't know. Just been some craziness. As a youth hockey coach, we've had sanctions due to COVID-19 and everything come down that, I guess we can only have, 11 people on our bench for games. This is like anything that has to do with USA Hockey, whether it's our scrimmages or anything, we can only have like 11 people on the bench. So that's 9 players, a goalie, and 1 coach. And, you know, our season's in jeopardy right now. So we're trying to like process, you know, are we going to have a year? Are we not going to have a year? It's been kind of a crazy thing. We learned that Friday. Took a trip with a girlfriend to celebrate her sister's birthday in beautiful Tyrone, Pennsylvania, just outside of Altoona. Friday night, I did one of your moves and stayed up till 4 a.m. Drinking with my girlfriend's brother-in-law. One of my moves. And, we had a good weekend. I'm still feeling the effects. I'm trying to catch up on sleep from it. It's been kind of a whirlwind of a week. And, just trying to catch up on sleep and some rest and relaxation for a little bit.
I do like how staying up at 4 a.m. on a Friday or Saturday morning, I guess, is my move.
Yeah, I figured that's something you still do. You're young.
Yeah, pretty much. You're right.
Right. Yeah. You're young and single. So, I mean, you're able to pull that off. It's really hard to do that when you're a little bit older than you are and I'm in a relationship. So,
hey, I just turned 28, so I'm not that much farther behind you.
I just turned 29, so it's like a whole year.
Yeah, it's a year and a month, I know. All right. The first round just ended in hockey, and we were pretty much given a show in a couple series. There were other ones that were basically one-sided affairs, but, you know, you look at, there were no 7-game series. It was either 5 or 6. I don't even think there was a sweep in any of these. So it was pretty succinct timing for the NHL with us taking a break last week because they started in the middle of the week after our last show and went into this week. And now we've only had like every series except for one start. You got the Flyers and Islanders start tonight. But we're going to do rapid fire and just go into each series and if we learned anything, surprised by anything, or if this is basically what we expected. So we're going to start over in the East in the 1-8 matchup, and the Flyers take down the Canadiens in 6 games. There were 3 shutouts in this series, and I can't really say I'm surprised by that because of the goaltending play. I know Carey Price has been around forever, and Carter Hart is basically being talked up a lot as one of the next top-tier goalies in the NHL. You know, 3 games in a row of shutouts, 1 by Carey Price, 2 by the Flyers. Not surprised the Flyers won, even though I picked the Canadiens to win. But for it to go to 6 games and have that much one-sided defense in those games, I'm not really shocked by it.
Yeah, I think this series was very much what people expected. I think the thing that kind of, if you really want to pull out something that's shocking, were the only games that more than 4 or 5 goals were scored in a game were both Montreal ones. One was 5-3 and one was 5-0. So all the games that were like 2-1, 2-0, 3-2, like the tight games were won by Philadelphia. So I thought that was interesting because of how a lot of people figured Montreal was going to have to play to win, that they were going to have to, play very defensively and almost capitalize on chances. And, I mean, game two, they pretty much did. I mean, they were able to take advantage of opportunities the Flyers gave them, and they took advantage in game two. And a lot of people thought, oh, maybe the Habs are up for another upset. And then it seemed like the Flyers in games three and four really tightened down and were able to keep Montreal off the board and not kind of play a high-risk game. They made sure they took care of themselves defensively and then kind of played, took Montreal style of play and put it right back in their face, essentially. So that's the one thing that shocked me about that series.
One thing that I will take away from this is the Matt Niskanen cross-check and the lack of, I don't know, responsibility of the refs to call that at the time. It baffled me to see that hit and or that cross check and nothing gets called as he's bloodied up, and eventually they found out he had a broken jaw from that cross check. But I believe earlier that game, Brendan Gallagher got a game misconduct for boarding, I forget who or for whom I should say, and it just seemed inconsistently called that game. And I thought that was going to piss off the Habs enough to maybe make a comeback in that series, but it came up short in game six.
Yeah, I think the thing about the Niskanen hit, too, that I think the one comparable that I saw was it was very similar to the cross-check he gave Sidney Crosby in 2017, I believe. And it's the thing that it's like people are – you know, trying to talk about player safety, player safety, player safety, and then, you know, that play happens where it's already happened once, and he's only getting one game again. Like, why is he not treated as a repeat offender and given multiple games in the playoffs? Because he clearly has no problem making that play, and he's not going to change his style again either.
It was Nazem Kadri that got the rest of the series the year he was with the Maple Leafs against the Bruins, and they ended up not winning that series last year as well. So, I Matt Niskanen probably should have had more, but I don't think that affected the series.
Yeah, I mean, so, but still, I mean, that's Brendan Gallagher is an important part to that hockey team, and for him to go down. And again, like I said, the Niskanen hit is eerily similar to the one that he put on Sidney Crosby. And he only got one game for both of those. So, you know, I think I saw on Twitter, it might have been Mark Madden. Sorry for the name drop, but it might have been Mark Madden or Josh Yoey said something about that Matt Niskanen never played that tough when he was here in Pittsburgh or something like that. And to a point, they're right. Even if that's not the exact quote, it's something similar to that. There's something to say about that. I mean, when Matt Niskanen was here, I don't ever remember him playing like a hard-nosed style of game. So, like, you know, he's clearly just picked this up when it's time in Washington and Philadelphia. So, I think that's the one thing that NHL fans are a little, I wouldn't say disgusted with, maybe more, frustrated with, is that, you know, again, it's the same hit and a similar type of play with probably a worse injury than what we saw with Crosby. And he still got the same punishment for it. Like, it just doesn't make sense.
I think I'd also need to clear up. I think I said Brendan Gallagher got ejected in that same game, but it was him that took the hit. I forget the Canadian that got ejected earlier in that game for a boarding hit.
Kotkaniemi?
Kotkaniemi. Yes, bro. Yeah, that's right. You know, the man that everyone knew going into the Penguin series. So, all right, let's move on to the next series, which I thought, I mean, it did not get better than game one in this series between the Lightning and Blue Jackets, going into not one, not two, not three, not four, but five overtimes. And it delayed the next game after than the Hurricanes and Bruins to 11 a.m. the following day. But the Lightning ended up winning that game and winning the series 4-1. And, you know, this could have been anyone's game, each game, but the Lightning were just capitalizing on more opportunities and ended up really, well, first off, Corpusalo to go have a 947 save percentage and go 3-5 in the bubble is just one of the most absurd hockey stats there is.
Yeah, you said that's his save percentage, right?
I believe so. It was 947.
So, that's really impressive to stop 95 shots and have a record of 3-5. That's absolutely absurd. As far as the series goes, I heard a lot of people like complaining about the 5 overtime game and that how terrible it is for the game because the series is going to be real bad. Some of those, I think that's what makes those series great, though, that we'll look back and go, hey, remember that 5 overtime game Tampa and Columbus played that, you know, it's similar to the Penguins and Flyers, the Islanders, and I believe the Capitals played one in the late 80s on Easter Sunday that was crazy. So I don't think we see those enough to complain, like, on a rapid pace to complain about them. I think they're kind of cool when you see them because it's truly a war of attrition. It's what it's about if you really want to win the cup is if you can get through that and then go on and win the cup, it's kind of like a nice little add to your playoff run. But I mean, that series may or may not have been decided in game one because if, you know, when you lose a game like that, it can really deject your spirit. And I mean, they may have only played 5 games in the series, but they pretty much played 6 with how long game one went.
My favorite joke about that was about that first game that Tampa Bay won was that Tampa Bay played almost as many minutes in game one against the Blue Jackets this year than they did last year in 4 games. So
it's actually kind of funny.
I thought the Lightning were just almost, I'm trying to think of the right way to say it. Because I think the Blue Jackets played a harder style of hockey, just trying to beat them down. But the Lightning were just that much better than them, and especially in just capitalizing with the opportunities like I mentioned earlier. It was like the Blue Jackets had no answers for how well they played against the Lightning. So I thought the Blue Jackets had a chance to pull it off again. Lightning showing that they are usually the better team year to year and move on into the next round. So after that one, let's move on over to the one series that I didn't really expect to end this way. The Islanders winning the series against the Capitals in easy fashion, 4-1. They took a 3-0 lead. Washington then won game 4, but then the Islanders come back and shut out the Capitals 4-0. Which basically set the stage for Todd Reirden to get the heck out of there. Jeff, I think you might have picked the Islanders to win this series, but did you expect it to go down like this?
I didn't think it would be this easy. The one thing I will say, and this is kind of going back to Todd Reirden getting fired, part of me thinks he got a little bit of a tough hand dealt to him because he was given the reins to basically a Stanley Cup winning team that won with a great coach in Barry Trotz. And he pretty much was told, don't screw it up. But, you know, his system might have been a lot different than what Barry Trotz had won with in Washington. And I just don't think he really got a fair shake there. He was given Stanley Cup championship expectations to something that I don't know if he was really up for. Like, you know what I mean?
That makes sense.
I just think it was really unfair for them to say, like, okay, here's the keys to a Ferrari with a stick shift, but he's only driven automatic. Like, that's what I feel like kind of happened to him. So I kind of put the Capitals in a similar situation with the Penguins as far as where they're at with their franchise. You got an aging superstar, aging core. They've underachieved more than Pittsburgh has. So I'm interested to see what's going to come out of Washington. I guess the GM came out, if it wasn't yesterday, it was, it would have been yesterday because he got fired, that they're going to be looking for an experienced head coach. And if you look back on the history of the Capitals in the Ovechkin era, they've been getting coaches on the cheap. So I'm kind of interested to see who's going to take over that job. You're going to hear the usual suspects, guys like LaViolette, Bruce Boudreau might come in for a second round of a tenure there. So I'm interested to see where they go, because this next hire is crucial to see where they want to be at in the near future, and where this shapes up post Alexander Ovechkin.
What do you think was the worst ad for their team? Was it Patrick Marleau to the Pens or Ilya Kovalchuk to the Capitals?
Cool. I mean, I didn't watch a ton of the Capitals, to be honest with you. So I don't know what Kovalchuk's role was there. I know that if I was running the Penguins, just me personally, and the issues that the power play had going into the bubble, and even going into the trade deadline, I would have made the deal for Ilya Kovalchuk for the Penguins and not Patrick Marleau. So I'll say Patrick Marleau.
Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to see where you felt on that, because, as you said, aging superstar, aging core, it's almost like they made the same move at the trade deadline as well.
Yeah, like, I think when I look back on the Kovalchuk deal, for the Capitals, I just don't get it, because they're Ovi's that power play, and Ilya Kovalchuk plays that same spot on the power play. You know what I mean? Like, it just didn't make sense. And the Marleau deal, I honestly think they wash out almost.
Yeah.
That they're just both equally as bad for each team.
Yeah. I mean, I was just trying to think maybe that one kind of opened up. You kind of saw one maybe not pan out as much as the other. So just wanted to see where you sat on that one. So let's go to the one that I was just overall mostly disappointed about how the outcome of this series went on. A mix of a hatred for a team, and also as much as I liked this team and I wanted them to be in the finals, they come up short against the Bruins yet again. The Boston Bruins win in five games against the Hurricanes, 4-1. And when when everything seemed to fall apart for the Hurricanes, I believe it was game four that the Hurricanes had a 3-0 lead going into the third period. And then at the 7:26 mark, the Brush scores, and it's all downhill for the Hurricanes there. Clifton comes back 3 minutes later. A minute and a half later, here comes Marchand. And DeBrusk comes back again, 14-17. Or excuse me, it was a 2-0 lead going into the third, because then Teravainen scored with a minute and a half left to go, but it was short. So Hurricanes go down 3-1 in that game, or in the series at that point, losing 4-3, and then they lose 2-1 in the final game. I really like the Hurricanes and how they play, but the Bruins are just that much more, I guess, well-rounded.
Yeah, the one thing that you keep hearing people in the hockey world praise is how Boston continues to be able to be successful with their aging core, like we've talked about with teams like Washington and Pittsburgh, who are kind of trying to figure themselves out. But yeah, the game you talked about, that Boston came back down 3-0. I mean, that was a turning point in the series, right? When you have a team on the ropes like that, you have to step on their necks and get that game win. It might not win you the series, but giving that up can lose you the series. And that's exactly what happened to Carolina. And, you know, I'm not the biggest fan of Boston, but, man, do they just find a way to get it done, right? Right when you think
they do.
Right when you think you have them, they find a way. They're starting to remind me a lot of, like, the St. Louis Cardinals in the early 2010s. Like, you know what I mean?
Don't
like,
go away.
Yeah, you're just like, oh, we finally got them. Like, the team that's quote-unquote perfect, we finally got them. We finally got them beat. And then it's like, slap, single, and then, like, a single into the gap. And it's like, well, there that goes. They're back in it again.
I'd say, aside from the team out west that we support the most, Carolina is one of the most fun teams to watch in the NHL.
Yeah, they play a really, really fun style. And I've really started to like how Rod Brind'Amour handles his team. Like, he seems like a hybrid. He's like a hybrid of like a Mike Sullivan and like a Dan Bylsma, if you could ever get something like that. Because, like, you could tell, like, his players really want to play for him, but he's not a pushover to guys either. Like, he really pushes that team too. So, yeah, I love how they play. Became a really big fan of Rod Brind'Amour, and he's gonna do wonders for that organization if they keep giving him time.
So that was the East. Let's move on over to the West. First series we can go over is Vegas and Chicago. I believe both you and Zach predicted an upset in this series, but I went with the Golden Knights, who are probably one of the most smoothest teams right now in the bubble, especially out in Edmonton. They win the series 4-3. They had a 3-0 lead. Chicago was able to get one win in game four, winning that game 3-1. But then the Golden Knights get it done 4-3 in game five. They were down 2-0 in game five. So, I mean, similar to the Hurricanes having a lead in a series game whenever you're down, they couldn't get it done, and the other team just came back and shut it down. So, Jeff, I know I picked Colorado to win the cup, but Vegas looks really good right now.
Vegas looks good right now. You're right. They're very, very deep. I think that's the best way I can describe them is that, yeah, they got a lot of skill and they got a lot of speed. They can score goals. They got great goaltending. But, like, you look up and down their lineup and they're just good. They're the type of team that's just going to come at you in waves and waves, and they're gonna find that one matchup and exploit it. And right now they're just so good right now. I mean, you saw what they did to Vancouver last night when we start getting into our second round. But man, are they good! And I know they've had some drama that we've seen with Alan Walsh, Marc-Andre Fleury's agent, with the picture that he posted. But yeah, it's a good hockey team they have there in the Sin City. So we'll see what's going to be the future for this team. And you got to figure the cup's the ultimate goal, right? Like, if they don't win the cup this year, you got to wonder, are they going to make changes, or if they're going to stick with the same roster?
Well, I mean, yeah, it has to be roster changes at that point, because they already made their head coaching change, which was one of the most bizarre moves when it came to the head coaching carousel this year. But yeah, I don't think too many changes need to be made if they don't end up winning the cup. I think it just depends on how they go out. Like, if they go out in this series, then yes, I do think there are going to be some changes being made. But if they go on to the Western Conference Finals and maybe lose in Game 7 in an overtime matchup, or get to the Cup and maybe lose late in the series, like a Game 6 or 7 type of matchup, not much has to be changed then. So it has to just blow up in their face immediately. Like, you can almost say it kind of like the Pens in 13 against the Bruins in the 2013 Eastern Conference Finals.
Well, I mean, here's my question for you, though.
Okay.
After what transpired over the weekend with Marc-Andre Fleury's agent, is that an issue? Winning. That's not okay.
Right.
Like, you can't do that. Not when your team's in the middle of a playoff run. That is the last thing. And I'm not saying that Marc-Andre Fleury is responsible for it, because he's not. He's kind of thrown into this. And everything, but for his agent to do this, I mean, this crushes Fleury's career, right?
In a way, it kind of does, but I don't know. First off, the addition of Robin Leonard was because Fleury was a little injured at the time, correct?
I believe so.
So when it, like, if you want to compare this to the first Stanley Cup run when Fleury was hurt and Murray steps up, Mike Sullivan gave Fleury a chance in game five, which might have been a bad draw for Fleury, you know, not playing that long, that far into the playoffs, and then losing in overtime in game five. And that was the only action that he got in that first Stanley Cup run. If Peter DeBoer wants to go to Marc-Andre Fleury because he thinks his feelings are hurt, and you're winning on, like, and you're winning this well with how everything's been played, that's not going to be the right move. So I don't want to say his career is squashed, because you've seen what the man has done in the regular season with this team and carried them to the Stanley. Well, not carry, but he was a part of that success in their first year as an organization. So yes, I think it's more of a distraction than it is a real issue with the team. It's there, but you can kind of squash it when you're winning. You know, if you were losing and that picture comes up, then that's an issue.
So with this whole thing, though, I mean, like we talked about, Robin Leonard was brought in because Fleury was hurt. I mean, this is eerily similar to what happened to him in 2016. I'm interested to see what Vegas does at the end of the year, because this is not okay. Like, you know, they're doing what's best for their franchise and for the team, and you have an agent come out and basically say the organization stabbed him in the back. It's not a good look. It's not a good look at all on Alan Walsh. It's not a good look for Marc-Andre Fleury, because now he's out trying to defend himself, defend the agent, which I'm sure he wants to rip his agent, but he can't do that because then that causes an even more of a bigger story of a guy that he's known since he was 15 years old to all of a sudden he rips him and fires him. It's such a complicated issue that I don't know, man. I wouldn't be shocked if Marc-Andre Fleury is out of Vegas. And before anybody starts with the whole, well, this clearly means Jeff wants Fleury back in Pittsburgh, that's not the case. It's not the case at all. So I don't know. I'm interested to see what happens here in Vegas come the offseason.
I think when you are an agent who's, I'm assuming that they're not anywhere near them because of this bubble. So when you don't have that much communication or even face-to-face time with each other, you're going to do some more bold things if you see with your client, they aren't getting what they should be getting in your mind. So I want to say without this bubble, this controversy doesn't happen. But I'm just going to leave it at that, because I think we can get more into that later, depending on how Vegas does.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. And I mean, I just think it's such a bad move by the agent there. I mean, I know you're trying to defend your client, but to do that in the middle of a playoff run, it's one thing if Robin Leonard would go on and win the cup, and this is done in, if it was a normal hockey season, like if this is at the end of July and this is something, whatever. But the fact that you're doing it like square in the midst of the playoffs on the night before your game one, like that's just something that, like, as an organization is just completely unacceptable.
Exactly. So let's move on to the next series. And Jeff, it's our boys, the Colorado Avalanche, really took out the Coyotes to dinner and then never called them back, ending the series in five games with back-to-back 7-1 wins. Was this just an epic collapse of the Coyotes because they were able to compete in game three, or were the Avalanche just that much better than this Coyotes team?
I think the Avalanche were that much better. I mean, you watch some of these games, it almost looked like when hang on one second, sorry. Sorry, my TV was like resetting and I didn't want the sound to like come on the podcast. So but no, I think this series, it just like wasn't close. The the Avalanche were so much better skill-wise. Nathan MacKinnon was just like he was unbelievable in the series. It honestly looked like when you watch World Junior games and like Canada plays like Latvia, and they beat them 7-1 and outshoot Latvia like 60-14. Like it wasn't close. There was, I mean, you want to talk about some of the easiest overs you'll ever hit. That was one of them because you just knew Colorado was going to come out and they were trying to end games in the first period, which they did twice.
It was just almost like Nathan MacKinnon was toying with some of those defenders like Jonathan Chychrun and everyone else on what he could do. And for him to set up, I think in back-to-back games or even in the same game, rebound goals while driving straight towards the goalie and setting it up for the person behind him crashing was just incredible.
I think too, in game five, I was really shocked that Rick Tocchet didn't pull Darcy Kuemper after it was 3-0 just to get him out of there. Because I mean, Antti Raanta Darcy Kuemper. I'm getting my names mixed up. Darcy Kuemper was fantastic. Like, yeah, it looks like he gave up 14 goals in the last two games, but I mean, he did everything he possibly could to try to keep his team in it. And when you run into a skilled team, you just run into a skilled team. And you almost felt bad for him because you knew he was trying his damnedest to keep that team in it, and he just couldn't.
So, you know, kudos to the Coyotes because I was very happy with them beating the Predators, but, you know, you're not getting past that Avalanche team that easily. So the next series, one that kind of threw me by surprise because I didn't think they played that well in the round robin, was the Dallas Stars defeating the Calgary Flames in six, especially the final game, winning by the final score of 7-3. One dude that I had learned about in this series and especially this game was Gurionov and how filthy of a shot this kid has on him with the Dallas Stars. What do you think of the series?
I was surprised. I mean, it was close, a little bit closer than I expected. What a tough way to end it if you're the Calgary Flames. You're up 3-0 and then you give up three unanswered. You pulled your goaltender, you called timeout. You literally tried everything to stop momentum, and the Dallas Star juggernaut just kept coming and coming and coming. So I think now the interesting thing is what's going to happen out of Calgary now, right? With this core, I mean, they got past the first round, but I don't know if that's going to last. There's some speculation that Johnny Gaudreau might be on his way out. Unfortunately, one of those rumors is him going to Philadelphia, which like that would crush me as a Boston College hockey fan because he's like our pride and joy in the NHL right now. And if he plays for those scumbags in Philadelphia, that's going to hurt a lot. So, I'm interested to see what happens with Calgary in the offseason, what moves they decide to make. As far as Dallas, boy, have they found their scoring touch. They struggled to score goals early on in the bubble, but it seems like they got their scoring touch back a little bit.
Oh, yeah. This was a team that, like we mentioned, almost looked like it was hard for them to get the puck into the net. But you look at the last couple games. I believe it was the August 16th, the Sunday, yeah, when the Stars tied up the series 2-2 in game four. This was the turning point because not only did you have in the second period where Gurionov scored on a power play with under a minute left to go to make the game at the time, I believe, 4-3 and or trailing 4-3. Then in the third period, the Flames get another one. So it was actually tied up 3-3. My apologies. Flames get another one to take the lead 4-3. But then with 12 seconds left to go, Pavelski gets his hat trick to tie it up. So you had two goals with less than a minute in the period scored by the Stars. And then Radulov ended it in the first overtime with about 4 minutes left to go in the ball game. I just thought that was incredible grit by the Stars. And then after that, it was just almost easy sailing for them. They Oh, they won game 5 2-1, but then just like you said, they just poured it on in that last game, 7-3.
Yeah, you could tell they're starting to get a little bit of a little bit of a boost there once they got going in that 3-0 deficit in the deciding game. You feel the momentum coming, and it was interesting that the Flames decided to pull their goaltender first. They give up another one to make it 4-3. Call timeout to really, really slow it down, and then three more end up going in to make it 7-3. So at that point, it was too late for Calgary. But the Stars might finally start being the juggernaut that everybody's been kind of expecting out of them the last couple of years.
They were number one seed not too many years ago, maybe even during the Pens' first Stanley Cup run, and it just hasn't really panned out for the Stars in the D-town of Dallas. So, final matchup was the reigning Stanley Cup champions, and there will be a new Stanley Cup champion this year because the St. Louis Blues got ousted by the Vancouver Canucks. Series going to 6 games with the Canucks winning game 6, 6-2. Jordan Binnington was a little flawed in this series, looked a little shaky in a couple games, didn't get the start, game 3 or 4. It looked like Jake Allen played in that game for the Blues, which they won. I think it was game 3. But it just seemed like Binnington was a little lost out there, and the young guns of the Canucks move on into the second round.
Yeah, you know what? The Canucks might be my second team that I'm rooting for right now in these playoffs. I don't know if you've been hearing these comparisons, but a lot of people have been comparing the Canucks to like the Blackhawks before they started winning their cups. Like, they're young, a lot of similarities, like. They're saying like Bo Horvat's like Jonathan Toews. You got Brock Besser. They're similar, like a Patrick Sharp, Patrick King kind of player. So Quinn Hughes is like a Duncan Keith. You got a lot of similarities there. So I don't know if they're quite there yet, but this team, sky's the limit for them in the future. They're lucky enough that they're not in the same division as Colorado. So, like, those two might be your top two teams in the Central and the Pacific, respectively. And, we might be seeing a lot of those two teams in the playoffs in the future. But I like Vancouver. I hope they push forward and they go further. But, I just don't know if they're ready yet. I that's obviously a big upset over the reigning defending Stanley Cup champions, but... I just don't know if they're ready to win yet. Very similar to Pittsburgh and the Blackhawks before they got their success. You almost have to be there once, experience it, and then you're ready to win.
Yeah, there are a lot of similarities, as you mentioned, to maybe a rising team like the Blackhawks were with their core back in the day. One thing that I'll mention. Could you say it's almost to the point where you would flip a coin as to who should win the Rookie of the Year between Quinn Hughes and Cale Makar? Because I think Quinn Hughes is a very shifty defenseman with really good hands and a nice shot. But Cale Makar just seems to do everything solid and smoothly, and there's really no flaws to his game.
Yeah, and you know what's crazy, too? The favoritism in this argument is just so split, too, because you have Cale Makar, Colorado Avalanche. He's got the favorite there. Quinn Hughes, American. He's got the favorite there. You know, up and down. I mean, it's just so split. I think I'm right there with you that it could be. It's a complete coin flip on who it is. I think it's going to be Quinn Hughes, though. I just have this back feeling that it's going to be Quinn Hughes. Although I wouldn't be shocked if it's Cale Makar either.
So that was the first round, and Jeff, I did better than last year, and it's hard to go worse than 1-8 last year. I went 3-8 this year, And all of those being in the West, the only one that I got wrong in the West was the Flames beating the Stars. Looked good for a little bit, but then game four happened and it just went downhill. Went 0-4 in the East, I believe, for the second year in a row. So kudos to me.
Yeah, there you go. Did you happen to keep track of the other two?
That I don't think so, but I think you might. Well, here's the thing. I remember you picking the Blue Jackets to go to the finals. So that's gone.
Yikes.
I had the Hurricanes going to the finals. So that's gone.
Yikes.
Zach does have the Flyers winning.
Yeah, I don't like that.
I don't like it either, but it's likely. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it's, you know, it can still happen between, you know, our other two teams that we picked to go to the finals.
Yeah, I really don't want the Flyers to be remotely close to the Cup final. Don't make the Cup ball disgusting and gross.
I want to say that no one picked the Lightning to win. And I can't remember about the Bruins. You had the Islanders, I think, for sure. As far as the West, I'm not. You both had Chicago, and I can't remember about the Stars and Flames. I think we all know. Zach picked the Coyotes to go to the finals. I remember that.
Yeah, I do remember that too. Then they ran into a juggernaut of the Colorado Avalanche. So yeah.
You could have just said they were in an avalanche.
I see what you did there.
Round two, we got Vegas and Vancouver. We got Colorado and Dallas. We got Philly and New York Islanders. We got Boston and Tampa Bay. Boston and Tampa Bay have already started their series. That was yesterday with Boston winning the matchup 3-2. Didn't really get to catch any of this, but just looking at the stats here, Boston was able to get a 3-0 lead early in the third period. And the Lightning finally started scoring with Hedman getting a goal halfway through the third. And then Hedman, why not again, get one with a minute and a half left to go. But the Lightning were unable to come out tie it up to send it into overtime. Boston gets game one. I kind of like Boston in this series because I think they are going to be able to lock it down when they have to and not let the Lightning's gets as many chances as the Lightning were able to get against the Blue Jackets.
Yeah. I think the thing that worries me about Tampa Bay in the series is that they're almost trying to be Boston and they're not being the Tampa Bay Lightning. And what I mean by that is, I don't know if you remember watching the World Cup in 2016 and Team USA had John Tortorella be their head coach, and they built their team with a lot of grit. They didn't have a lot of big name skill guys like Phil Kessel got left off that team, and the big reason was because they felt that in order to beat Canada, that they had to be a grittier team than Canada, and it kind of took away the identity of the United States and their team identity, and I think that I'm seeing something very similar with Tampa Bay, that they're not being the Tampa Bay Lightning that's skilled, fast, can score a lot of goals. They're almost they're trying to be Boston, and I don't think you can be grittier than the Boston Bruins combined with that skill.
No, the way that the Bruins have been built is not a way that the Lightning can compete with. I agree with you there. That's one thing that I guess does make sense with what you're saying and how Tampa has struggled against, you can almost say, the Goliath in front of them, is that they just try to be like them when they can't be like them. They have to play like they do against every other opponent. And really, as much as I've seen the Lightning, which isn't that much, it needs to be a fast play that gets you a lot of shots on net, where you have your snipers out there that will be able to pick corners when usually you don't get the average Joe hitting that corner, and then you get the sloppy rebounds down low as well.
Yeah, I like I said, I just don't know if they're going to be able to out grit the Bruins, and we saw what Columbus did to them last year. And I mean, game one, I mean, it just seemed like Tampa just took forever to get going, and with that five overtime game in the series before with Columbus, I don't know if they got enough left in the tank, to be honest with you.
Well, you know, five overtimes is a lot of hockey, so we'll see how it goes. I think Boston's going to win this series. Tampa Bay should be able to tie it up in game one, but there's going to be a defining moment in game three or four for Boston that gets them over the hump, and they end it in either five or six games.
Yeah, I mean, I want to take Tampa just because I don't want to sound like I'm hopping on the Bruins just because they won game one, but Boston just looks so good. Yaroslav Halak's doing stuff that he was doing in 2010 all over again. So them losing to Tukarask right now, it seems like it hasn't mattered. So
yeah, I thought it would, but it hasn't.
Yeah, it clearly hasn't. And Yaroslav Halak is getting up there in age. I mean, he's looking like he was in 2010. So I think I'm going to take Bruins, and I'll say five.
All right. Then let's head over to the other matchup in the East with the Islanders and the Flyers. They are halfway through the first, and the Islanders have a 1-0 lead in this game. That goal was scored by Green, assisted by Nelson with six minutes and 6 seconds into the game. And I don't know how to feel about this series, because I think
hate both teams, I'll tell you that much.
Oh, no, for sure. But like, I don't know how to maybe fairly assess it then, because of the hatred of these teams. I want to give this series to the Islanders because I think that they maybe play a better style of hockey, but I think that might also be clouded judgment of how I view the Flyers with how they've played this year and how hot they've been even before the pandemic hit stopped the world. So right now I'm leaning towards picking the Islanders just because of how easily they were able to dismantle the Washington Capitals, who are a much better team than the Canadiens overall. I mean, on paper and on the ice, I don't see how Philly can overcome the challenge against who I think is a better coach, Barry Trotz. So,
yeah, I'm going to be honest with you. I hate one team. I hate the Flyers. No, let me rephrase that. I hate one team. I hate the Islanders. I hate another team more, and I hate the Flyers more than I hate the Islanders. So, my heart's telling me to take the Islanders. My brain's saying, well, the Flyers aren't as bad as what they once were. So, I'm going to take the Islanders. I hope it's in four. If I could take them in three, I would. I just can't take the Flyers. Like I know that's black and gold glasses, but I really hate the Flyers a lot. And I hope they have another 40 years of losing again. So I got Islanders in four. Would be three if I could.
I got the Islanders in six. I think they'll win game five, and I think that'll be the moment of the series where the Islanders can lock it down. So
hey, real quick, since we're talking about the Flyers here, and I mean, I just said I hated the Flyers for about 15 seconds straight. You're obviously like a huge the Pirate fan of the group. Like, who's your guys that's like team that you can't stand? Because like I've always wondered that, how that worked.
Here's the thing for me. It would be the Cardinals. And the only reason that it's not like the tip of the mountain of hate for the Pirates, just because they've been the polar opposite, is because I've had a best friend since I was 8 years old who was also a Cardinals fan. So that's the only reason that I tolerate them. So it's would be the Cardinals, just because there's no geographical reasoning for it. There hasn't been any reason almost on the field to show for it. It's just usually been because they were the opposites of us all the time. But because of what's happened recently and what happened when the Pirates were on the rise and this other team was pretty good as well, the Cincinnati Reds. I mean, you got that team who was basically almost like a bully that thought he was better than what he was. And sometimes in some aspects they were, but you were just showing up to the block and they were like, you know, hold on, what have you done here in the past? Like, step up. What do you got to say about this? Cause the one thing I'll always remember that kind of fueled everything was 2014. I believe it was August 3rd. It was a Friday, with a 3-0 lead for the Reds in the top of the ninth with two outs, no one on. Andrew McCutchen up to bat. What does Aroldis Chapman do? Go straight for the shoulder and hits him first pitch with like 101-mile-per-hour fastball. And then he gets the next out like that. And I think that's kind of what's fuel right now for a Pirates and Reds hatred at the moment, because they're in the division. You both were good at the time. For a while, you both have sucked. But now the Reds seem to be on the rise, but still in their suckish Reds ways. I think that's the team, at least for me, that kind of gets the juices flowing more.
Okay.
But it's not like Penguins Flyers.
Right. Yeah. No, I was just curious because, like,
the Phillies are out of the division.
Right.
So,
yeah, the Phillies are out of the division. I mean, the Cubs really don't do much, I don't think, for now.
It was just for a year or two. Then they won the World Series, and it was like, all right, they did what we couldn't.
Right, yeah. So I was just honestly just curious. I didn't know how that worked for some people in baseball.
And with divisional realignment, it kind of changed everything because, well, not that they were ever in the same division, but, you know, the Braves were that team too, but we were too young for that.
Right, yeah. That's what, like, people, like, are shocked when, like, they go, oh, you're a Braves fan. You must be from Georgia. No, I'm from Pittsburgh, actually. Oh. Like, I get that look all the time when I tell people I'm a Braves fan, and I never grew up with that. Like, I grew up with the Braves on TBS and, you know, Tripper Jones killing the Mets. And, you know, there's nothing better to me than when the Mets lose. I think that's my favorite thing next to when the Flyers lose. And the only thing better than the Flyers losing is when Sidney Crosby puts up 5 points on the Flyers, causing them to lose. So,
right.
I agree with you. Like, we didn't grow up in, like, the Braves and Pirates hate each other. It was just kind of like, this is the team that did that to them. So, I mean, you know, you're kind of probably brought up to hate the Braves, but you're kind of like, well, I mean, I didn't see it live.
Yeah.
You know, what am I supposed to do about it?
Trust me, I'm not a fan of them, but right. It's not like the only reason I'd be I have hatred for the Braves is Jerry Meals. That's it.
Oh yeah. I mean, you can go back on my social media if you want to do one of them crazy, like, oh, look what Jeff said, like, back in 2011 or whatever year it was. I did not like winning that game the way we did. I thought he was out. He should have been. And, you know, Jerry Meals screwed up. And it probably gave us replay. It's probably one of the biggest reasons we have replays for a play like that.
Yeah, I mean, we got another home plate play to discuss with the Braves later on in the show. But let's move on to the other two matchups. We're kind of getting a little lengthy on time right now, or at least I think so. But let's move on to the West and the Vegas Golden Knights taking on the Vancouver Canucks. And I think the Canucks forgot to show up this game. I don't know why. But the Golden Knights win this game 5-0. You know, Leonard, I'm pretty sure this is his first shutout of the playoffs, round robin or in the first round. Jacob Markstrom faced 34 shots, but, you know, letting in five, you're usually not going to win. So most of the scoring coming in the second period with the Golden Knights, like I said, they look to be on cruise control right now.
Yeah, they look really good. I don't know how I want to judge Vancouver on it. I honestly didn't watch a game. It was way too late for me to watch. And at that point, since it's starting to get dark outside a little bit earlier, I've started watching Unsolved Mysteries on Amazon. Do you remember watching that when you were a kid?
No, not really. When it came to anything not sports back in the day. It was either cartoons or sports.
Okay. Well, Dave, do me a favor. Do you have Amazon Prime?
Yeah, I'm in the middle of a show right now.
Prime Video. You get a minute, start watching some of these, like this show. I grew up watching it with my mom when I was a kid, and it is some scary shit. Some scary shit. So I started actually watching that last night. I didn't even bother to watch the Vegas Vancouver game, but yeah, I don't know if it's because of the quick turnaround for Vancouver, but I mean, Vegas is a good hockey team. And I mean, this might be where the exit is for Vancouver. But again, like we talked about, sky's the limit for them in the future.
Oh yeah, for sure. Like I think Vancouver's getting eliminated this series. I think they're going to be eliminated early as well. I would say potentially a sweep, but I'll go bold and just say a sweep. Why not? Just because I think five is just a safe bet at this point with the Golden Knights. The Canucks could surprise us in a couple games, but I don't see that happening.
So real quick, this is absurd. This is going to just be a huge red alert. I have the Islander Philly game on right now, and they did like the bench shot of like Jordan Eberle, Matthew Barzal, and Anders Lee, and it looks like on the bench, like players have like water bottles that have their specific number for like which one they should use. Anders Lee is drinking out of number 27. Matthew Barzal, oh what a save, Carter Hart. Barzal's drinking out of number 13. Jordan Eberle is drinking out of like number 47. Like, Ebs, what are we doing here, man? Like there's a pandemic going on. You can't be drinking out of some Bud's water bottle. You got your own.
Don't put your lips on it. You'll be good.
Yeah, is that how that works? I thought the breathing thing was like the number one case of this garbage.
Breathe in. Breathe in. You'll be fine.
Breathe in. Breathe in.
I mean, do you expect the Canucks to maybe win a game or two?
I think so. I think they'll get at least one. Like I said, quick turnaround. It's just they had that hard fought series with St. Louis, which like I mean that's a battle in itself to beat the defending Stanley Cup champions. So, yeah, I'm gonna go with it, the Canucks at least getting one game.
Okay, all right. So you got five games over there. All right, last series to make some predictions, and this was the only one in which they have not played a game yet, because that will be tonight, and that is, or no, they already played, excuse me, no, we already went over the Philly and New York Islanders. The first game, which I was surprised that they played this early, but I guess they didn't want to lose one day without hockey in the bubble right now. The Dallas Stars beating the Colorado Avalanche 5-3 in the first game. And it was Pavel Francouz getting the start for the Colorado Avalanche. Philip Grubauer, I believe, just right now being deemed unfit to play. I haven't really heard any.
So he tore something. He tore or pulled something in the big hit. In game one against Dallas. So Francois came in the middle of game one against Dallas, and that's why he'll begin the start in game two.
So, you know, Francois facing against 20 shots, left two in. So Grubauer, yeah, I don't know why I thought he got the start, but I knew that something happened to Grubauer in the game. And going into game two, Eric Johnson is also not playing as well for the Avalanche. So, you know, my Stanley Cup winner, I believe yours too, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, they're not looking to be in such a good spot right now with the way the Dallas Stars have been playing. So I think if they go down 2-0 in this series, it's going to be very difficult for them to come back. Not saying it's going to be impossible, but you need to find a way to slow down that ridiculous offense right now. That's 12 goals in the last two games. The Avalanche were able to put up 14 in two games. So, you know, this might be the series to just bet the over all the time, right?
Yeah, I mean, right now, I think it was set at 5 on Saturday, and that covered no problem. But, yeah, I think this is going to be a pretty pretty high scoring series. And, you know, we've seen what Colorado can do offensively. And we talked about how Dallas has started to get themselves going in the goal scoring department. So, might be a little bit of road hockey we're going to see here in round two.
I still got the Avalanche winning. Probably going to be a 6 or 7 game series, especially with what is happening in the series right now. But if it goes to game two, it's going to be very shaky for the Avalanche to make that comeback, in my opinion.
Yeah, I got the Avalanche coming back. I think they're going to win in 6. I know how hard that's going to be after losing game one, but you know, I think having that style change where they just dominated so much in their series against Arizona, that to kind of have to reel it back in and play more responsibly, and you can't be as creative because you're playing against a more superior opponent, or more of a superior opponent. It's not necessarily a game where you're going to get 50 shots on net. I think that's where, you know, they kind of had to kind of make the adjustment, and they'll be back at it.
So, all right, that basically covers us for the what has happened in the playoffs. Jeff, I'm enjoying them whenever I get a chance to watch them, and I hope you are too. So it looks like the West, it really doesn't matter who wins. It looks like in the East, there's a lot of teams that we don't want to win. So go West, go, huh?
Yeah, pretty much. Like, I prefer Vegas not to win, but
oh, is that because of the Leonard situation?
No, it has nothing to do with that. It's just that, like, this sounds like such like a crybaby thing, but like it just how quick they were able to get things going. Like, it's not a cute underdog story anymore. Like, it seems like they have so many pieces like right off the hop that a lot of teams when they came in the league had to battle for 10, 15 years. Hell, the Penguins, it took them 24 years to get anywhere close to contend for a cup, and they've contended for a cup their first 3 years. So that's kind of like my beef with them. But again, that sounds like a whining fan whose team lost in the first round or didn't even make the first round. So, but I mean, that's
St. Louis Blues were able to make the cup their first 3 years. Different era back then for sure. But
yeah. Yeah, I know, but they were never close. They got swept all 3 of those years too, and they just happened to play all the expansion teams. That's how that worked.
Exactly. So, let's move on over to the only topic I want to talk about in baseball, and then we'll wrap it up here real quick, because I don't think it's much of a discussion as it is maybe a manager just airing out grievances. Jeff, you put out the tweet today. What did you think of? Well, just tell us the scenario, because I believe you were watching the game. So,
I watching the game? Sunday Night Baseball, Bright Lights, Big City in Atlanta, of course. So last night the Braves were playing the Phillies. The Braves have been having some pitching problems, and they fell behind. They were down, I believe, 5-3 going into the ninth. They're down to their final out. And sure enough, you know, the guy you want up, right? Freddie Freeman's up at the plate. First pitch he gets, classic Freddie Freeman slap into left center, right? Gets the gap. It's perfect.
Left center, I think, right?
Did yeah, left right center.
Okay, I thought you said right center for some reason.
So, yeah, sorry. I meant to say left center. But it hits the gap perfectly. One run comes in, scores easily. Dansby Swanson, who did not get the best lead or secondary lead for that matter, you know, he's hustling around the bag. Phillies run a pretty good cutoff play. They get the cutoff, and the throw comes into the plate. It's a little bit off down the third base a little bit, but it's not like up the line. Dave, you saw the play, kind of like came back towards like the backstop, kind yep. of like it was a little bit up, but it was still in like the home plate area. And the catcher goes to like go get the ball, and it's at the same time Dansby Swanson's coming in, and the throw and Dansby kind of get together. And he's tagged out. He's rolled out. It's a pretty crazy play. And I thought they made the right call. I thought he was out, and they reviewed it. And here's a quote. This was from Mark Bowen. He's the Braves writer for MLB.com. His quote after the game was, he, Realmuto, this is about violating the plate blocking rule. He was sitting there pretty good, but they're not calling that anymore. They need to take that off the book and just start blowing up catchers again.
And that was from manager Brian Snicker, correct?
That was from manager Brian Snicker post-game about the Buster Posey rule. So he is suggesting they need to take the Posey rule out of the rule book and just start blowing up catchers again.
See, I mean, with the Joe Kelly situation earlier in the year, where you're throwing at someone's head, even though it was not against, you weren't even on the team affected by in the championship when throwing at some Astros players as an LA Dodger this year. When you are basically going out of your way to, I guess, potentially hurt someone or do even more damage than what you should be able to do in a game like baseball, that's whenever it gets a little bit dangerous. And I think this is more just anger coming from Brian Snicker, because I know that it's a very difficult play to monitor when it comes to how home plate is structured in all of baseball parks. It's literally a plate and basically embossed into the ground, that it doesn't just pop up like first base, second base, and third base might when sliding into it. There's really no good way to straddle it, because you don't want them to touch the tip of that plate and, you know, be called safe. Because once you touch it, that's it. It's different than just hitting second or third and sliding and staying on that base. You can, once you touch it before you're touched out by the catcher, you're safe. That's it. It's done. You don't have to hold on to it. I think this is just Snicker being mad just because of how the cutoff throw from Gregorius trailed off a little bit and towards the baseline. And when you have to play the ball, the rule where it stays right now is that the catcher is technically not in the way. So looking on CBS Sports, they go over the rule itself, like Rule 601, quote, unless the catcher is in possession of the ball, the catcher cannot block the pathway of the runner as he is attempting to score. If, in the judgment of the umpire, the catcher without possession of the ball blocks the pathway of the runner, the umpire shall call or signal the runner safe. Then they go, there's a lot of subsections to this, but one of them is talking about notwithstanding when it comes to playing the ball. For instance, I'm just going to read this whole section right here, and then I'll be done. Quote, notwithstanding the above, it shall not be considered a violation of this Rule 601 I-2, Rule 713-2. I forget if those are subsections or not. If the catcher blocks the pathway of the runner in a legitimate attempt to field the throw, example, in reaction to the direction, trajectory, or the hop of the incoming throw, or in reaction to a throw that originates from a pitcher or drawn in infielder. In addition, a catcher without possession of the ball shall not be adjudged to violate this rule if the runner could have avoided the collision with the catcher or other player covering home plate by sliding. And I think this is just the bad end of the stick for Brian Snicker and the Braves for how the ball was being thrown in from Gregorius.
So here's my one complaint about that rule, though, is that if he's going to get the ball, like, if you watch that replay, like, he's still in the baseline to go get that ball, like, on his knees. I would consider that blocking, though, because he's obviously staying on his knees to get the ball with the purpose of blocking the plate, yes?
Yes, and I
think that's where Snit's upset, though, is because the throw's a bad throw. The throw is not on the plate.
Yeah, no, it was not a good throw.
And the fact that he was able to still go get the ball and block the plate, that's where he's saying that, you know, if we're going to allow him to do that, you know, there should be some repercussions of that throw being bad, because you're basically You're protecting the catcher, which is fine. That's player safety. But you're letting, with the how that play went, you're letting that throw go wherever it wants. But as long as a catcher's still able to block the play, he still can't be touched. Like, the runner's dead in the rights as soon as he turns third base. If it's within, you know, a first baseman's stretch of getting the ball, like he's that runner's dead in the rights. So I think that's where Snit's like, well, you know, if we're going to allow that, I mean, we may as well start blowing up catchers again, because you're basically taking runs off the board.
Yeah, and I see where you're coming from this, but there's really no other way to block a plate like there is a way to straddle a base at second or third when receiving incoming throws and trying to make a tag play. Like, if you notice on the replay where Andrew Knapp is standing, when the first run comes in, he doesn't have to move because he's in front of the plate and the runner goes in and touches the plate easily without having to avoid Andrew Knapp at the plate. And then once that throw comes in, that's whenever he tries to make the last second adjustments to get the ball in order, in my opinion, in order to try to avoid blocking the plate from Dansby Swanson. But because of how late he made that adjustment, kind of throws out Swanson's original attempt on how he's sliding in there, because with 15 feet left to go, you can't really adjust as quickly as you want to. The only thing that Dansby Swanson could have done is jump over the man, which has been done in baseball. So I just think I understand why maybe the wording of this rule could piss off some people like Brian Snitker and maybe even you after reading it out loud. But there are other ways for that player to get around the catcher, and one of them is just being by jumping.
Yeah, I don't know. I get player safety, but if you're gonna allow him to come out the way he did, I mean, you know, what's a runner supposed to do there? Just get tagged out and that's it? I mean, let's be clear, Dansby Swanson's not clean on this one, because he did get a terrible lead and he got an even worse secondary lead on the play as well. So that didn't help his cause. If he gets a better lead because he wasn't being held at first, then you have to how do I want to word this? I mean, he scores easily if he gets the better secondary lead and everything, but the fact that he didn't, you know, what's he supposed to do there in that situation?
I mean, he did what he could. He slid into the plate, and it looked like it adjusted his angle to the plate, but it didn't appear to adjust it by so much that it altered the entire course of the base running.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think there's been worse occurrences of this that maybe haven't been called. I just think this was one that really, really might irk you in a shortened season where you think you had one rod from you and one of 60 rather than one of 162. And I think that's more of a reason why this is getting blown up.
Right. No, I got you completely. I just found it curious that for a manager to come back and say we need to start blowing up catchers again. I thought that was the interesting point of that quote.
Does Brian Snitker get fined for that comment?
I don't think so, because he really didn't call anybody out, right?
No, he didn't
say that's an egregious call by the umpires. He just said that he disagreed with the rule.
Yeah.
So I think he's fine.
Okay. So let's wrap it up, shall we?
Cool. Sounds good. Do you want to do MVP?
Yeah. My MVP is going to be Slam Diego. 5 grand slams in 6 games, 4 grand slams in a row for the Padres, which is an MLB record. No team has ever hit a grand slam in 4 consecutive games, and they did it, and then they did another one 2 games later, 5 and 6 games. Slam Diego is my MVP of the week. They have a chance, I mean, with over 50% of the teams making the playoffs this year, they have a chance to make the playoffs, and who knows, maybe even be like the Habs and, you know, have a first-round upset. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, not bad, not bad. I'm going to go LVP here because there's a group of kids that really need to support here, and I'm reaching out to our audience about this. So Friday night, our organization got an email saying that we have been given certain protocols we have to follow with our youth hockey team. Basically saying that we can't have more than 25 people in the rink at one time. That includes that's referees, EMTs, coaches, and players. So obviously that puts a big burden on a hockey team. You know, my MVP here is going to be the kids, the coaches, mostly the kids more than anything, have started reaching out to our local and state officials as far as trying to get a way to get youth sports going again, because these kids can't deal with this staying inside the whole time and taking their activities away from them, because they need these activities. And I encourage everybody who is listening to contact your local government officials, whether it's at the state level, even at the federal level, do as much as you can, keep contacting them, because these kids need this. This is the one thing that they can do for an hour, three times a week to continue to, you know, keep their minds level headed. Contact them. Tell these government officials, we need to play. Let the kids play. Whether you're supporting a high school senior that's trying to play football this year and hopefully pursue a college career, or you're trying to support an 8-year-old kid who gets to play hockey three times a week, just because it's some exercise and maybe he's learning a learn to skate or whatever it may be, you're supporting kids. So please reach out to your state, local, and federal officials. Let's get these kids back on the ice, back on the field. Let's get youth sports going again, because these kids need it more than anything. So my MVP are the kids that have already done it, the parents that are encouraging their kids to do it. That's all I got. Again, please reach out to representatives, your state, local, federal officials, and let's get these kids back on the field. And you know, I know our listeners are gonna hopefully help these kids out.
I like the passion. One of the more passionate MVPs that we've had on this show. So I like what you did right there.
Thank you.
This has been the Icy Takes podcast. We hope you enjoyed it, and hopefully we didn't go off the rails too much. But hey, you know, that's just us. You can like us on Facebook at Icy Takes with Zach, Jeff, and Big Dave. Follow us on Twitter at Icy Takes, I-C-E-Y Takes, all together one word, because that's the way we like to spell it. You can follow the personal Twitters at Big_Dave52. Zach's not here, but at Zach Morris82.
And at JChrist_51.
Like our Lord and Savior, amen. Hopefully we'll be better than this week, next week. But until then, stay icy, people.
Love you guys. And when you finish the-